it's very difficult to get the media to do a story about any block of the Tenderloin that doesn't have the problems the media believes exists in the Tenderloin.
I don't want to talk about crime in the Tenderloin. You know, I don't think that that helps better the neighborhood.
It's looked at as a bad neighborhood with bad people.
I don't like this rumor that it's dangerous. People look at some drug dealers like, ooh, they're dangerous. They're really not, unless you're involved in their drug dealing.
Welcome back to The Intersection. So, I'm not going to lie. I've struggled with this episode and whether or not to even look at the complicated relationship between the drug dealers and their neighbors at the corner of Golden Gate and Leavenworth. Like some folks who live and work nearby, I worry that another story about drugs in the Tenderloin just adds to the negative reputation of a neighborhood that, in actuality, is filled with families, seniors, and new arrivals. But glossing over the difficult reality of the corner is not the answer. It makes it easier to look away from the pain and poverty at the center of our city, and we miss the stunning acts of compassion and strength that really epitomize life in the Tenderloin. So in this episode, rather than look away, we're going to get even closer.
Yeah, it looks like a shooting. You want to go down and find out?
Sure.
On my first full day recording in the Tenderloin, I go on a two-hour walk with Del Seymour. He lived here for a long time. Now he's one of the community's historians and gives daily walking tours of the area. He's helping me get a better sense of the neighborhood, and then this happens.
It was a shooting.
Del tries to put the shooting in perspective.
Every block is a different drug. This is our pill block, for the pills and heroin and so.
Turk and Leavenworth?
Yeah, this whole next block.
He's pointing up Leavenworth towards Golden Gate Avenue, which is also known as Pill Hill.
How often does this happen?
Not very often. There's a guy on every block, his whole job is to make sure nothing like that happens. That's like the Safeway security guard on every corner. He's to make sure that you can walk through here with that microphone and nobody bother you. Because if someone snatched that microphone, you're going to call the police, shut the block down. It's going to cost them a whole much more than that microphone. In an hour, they'll lose $4,000 or $5,000.
My name is Jason Chernis, former captain of Tenderloin Police Station. While drug dealing doesn't necessarily directly affect our safety, when we walk outside and we see this blatant criminal activity, that activity makes us feel unsafe in our community.
You know, there's always been homeless people here. There's always been a certain amount of drug dealing, a certain amount of violence, but nothing like it is right now.
That's Kim Jackson. She works at the hospitality union on the corner, where members come from all over the Bay Area to do their union business. As the situation has gotten worse at Golden Gate and Leavenworth, she's been asked by her union to try to improve street safety.
You know, for my members, they're afraid. They don't want to come to a union hall when people are trying to sell them OxyContin. You know, Roxy, Roxy, Roxy. You know, morphine, morphine, morphine.
That's a problem. They have to feel safe coming to their union hall. And the children deserve to feel safe walking down the street. There are two preschools within a half a block of Golden Gate and Leavenworth. On a pretty day, when they want to take the kids to the park, they dress them all in these little t-shirts that are too big for them, and they all hold on to this little rope. And when there's too much dealing, and they can't get down the street, and too many people shooting up, snorting, doing drugs, one of the teachers goes ahead of the children.
Kids coming through!
And they chant.
And the drug dealers try to hide what they're doing so the children don't have to see it.
There's a lot of pretty open drug dealing right in front of the clinic here at Golden Gate and Leavenworth. I know what that means for my patients. I'm Joseph Pache. I'm Director of Primary Care Homeless Services for the San Francisco Department of Public Health and Medical Director at Tom Waddell Urban Health Clinic. A lot of our patients will discuss how challenging it is for them to get to see us here and how they feel very vulnerable when they're being approached either to sell their medications or to trade medications for other substances, and especially for people who are trying to change towards a clean and sober living, this can be really triggering for them.
I was addicted to heroin for 5 years. I staved off heroin by using pills such as Dilaudid, and personally, being here is a trigger a lot of times because it's like right close to Pill Hill, and my nickname is Roxy. I was given that nickname back at UC Berkeley, and they're like, Roxy, Roxy. So every time they're like, Roxy, Roxy, I'm thinking people are calling my name. You know, today I feel proud because I was able to walk on Leavenworth by myself and not pick up any drugs.
You know, for every day that we're trying to help people stabilize their lives and get themselves to a point where they can function, you've got another whole group of people out there selling the drugs that got so many of them into problems in the first place. I'm Nancy Nielsen, and I'm the Deputy Director for Lutheran Social Services.
Lutheran Social Services is one of many nonprofits that's recently moved to this area. It got here in 2013. Within one block, there are now almost a dozen nonprofits and hundreds of supportive housing units. Even Joseph Pache, who runs the Tom Waddell Clinic, worries about the effect.
In some ways, it's hard to know how much our own arrival inadvertently has impacted this corner. People who are interested in buying prescription drugs or selling drugs, this is where their market is, right? It's one of those things. We're both part of the problem, part of the solution at the same time. It's that very uneasy reality of working here and living here. It's really easy to vilify people in the drug trade and say, you know, they're exploiting people and they're part of the problem. And yet I know their choices in life are constrained. And in many ways, they're here because this is the best set of options that they could actually come up with, given many things that have happened to them in their lives.
Initially, the dealers were convinced I was working with the cops.
Why are you standing with the mic?
Is that thing on?
Yes.
Why are you passing us back and forth? You listen to our conversation.
Hey, don't take a picture of me. No camera. Oh, that's all they need is audio, fool.
Understandably, they weren't up for being interviewed. But after many months and introductions from some locals, they realized I wasn't a threat. And some shared their stories and their own frustrations.
I got a few things I want to say, man. My name is the Magnificent, man. I stand up tall through it all, summer, winter, spring, and fall, man. You got to be tough, man, to be down here, man. I mean, man, it's a struggle out here, man. Just because they ain't paying no taxes don't mean that they have to put us in jail, man. We're not robbing nobody, knocking nobody aside their goddamn head. All we trying to do is live and get by, man. Yes.
It's a catch-22, because once you've been to jail, it's harder to get a job. So the drug trade becomes a means of survival, and that's why Carl is out here.
When you have a record, and you go try to get a job, and you be honest on the application, and you tell them, yes, I have a record, they never call you back. But if you say, no, I don't have a record, then they run the background, and they see you have a record, and you call and say, what happened with the job? Well, you lied. You told us you didn't have a record. I do what I got to do to take care of my kids by all means necessary.
Carla and most of the folks dealing on the corner live in Oakland. Like a lot of 9-to-5ers, they commute in on BART every morning.
My name is Keon. I'm 20 years old. I'm from West Oakland, California. Just out here, you know, just chilling, just trying to make a living. That's very respectful. We respect kids, we respect elders, you feel me? But this is not the only thing I do. You know, I go to Merritt College Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday. I'm not there today. I'm obviously missing school, which, you know, I'm not supposed to be. But yeah, I'm taking criminal justice up there too because I had no criminal record. You know, and I'm trying to be a juvenile probation officer. Maybe people do this to help them get through school or other things to do, but, you know. And you see my friend is right here with me. So,
because a lot of people go through shit. We don't got no money, so we get in situations. We get in situations that fuck our life up, and that's why we all run the drugs, though. But don't judge this book by its cover.
That's a good one.
These are young, smart entrepreneurs that it'd be nice if we could direct them in another place.
Can't fault them for their work ethic. You're here at 7:30 in the morning, and they leave at 6:30 at night, just like me.
Nancy and Kim and many social service providers near the corner are conflicted. They're fed up with all the dealing, but they don't just want the drug dealers to move on to another corner or neighborhood.
I would love to see a situation where we could engage the people who are selling drugs right in front of our clinic and figure out how we can meet the needs that are not being met, that compel them in many ways to be living this life.
And present them with real choices, that they could make a choice to leave the street and dealing if they wanted to, and that it would feel not like some kind of pipe dream.
I posed that possibility to a group of dealers.
If I was offered a job opportunity, I would take it. Why not? And it's paying more to being outside. Why not take it? Shit.
But in the meantime, what's a neighborhood to do with the very real consequences of the dealing on their doorsteps?
Now, we can call the police, and they will come and drive by, and people will leave. And when the police go, they come back. I don't know what the answer is.
Captain Jason Chernis has a theory.
Particularly in a neighborhood like the Tenderloin, enforcement is ineffective and it's at least inefficient. You know, the system really isn't set up to incarcerate people for long periods of time. You know, they're going to be involved in recidivism.
In fact, San Francisco has consciously moved away from mass incarceration. Since 1992, the city has reduced the number of people it sends to state prison by more than 90%.
When you have a lot of stuff that's related to people with, you know, mental disorders or addiction, enforcement is not going to fix that. The community can do more for public safety than the cops can ever do. You know, my thing is I want people that are happy and safe and doing good things on a corner, because when that's happening, drug dealers don't want to be around that. They want broken windows, they want urine smell, but they want something where people just don't care about it.
If there's one thing I've learned all these months, this is a neighborhood of people who care deeply. So a couple of years ago, when the dealing became more blatant and prevalent, they took action.
I was pregnant, went on leave for 3 months, came back, and it was so different.
That's resident Dina Hilliard.
And I was like, what the hell happened? Who are all these drug dealers? Like, where, you know, the street never looked like this before. So that's the thing. I was like, I am not going to walk through this every day with my daughter. So we need to talk about this.
Dina called Mike Anderer from DeMariac Academy and other neighbors on the block. They formed the 100 Block Safety Group and invited the police captain.
I met with a group of people from the 100 Block of Golden Gate. And we had a lot of people in the room that were concerned about the activity on the block. And then everyone started saying, well, we need to do this and we need to do that. And then I said, why don't we start by talking about what the problem is? And then everyone looked at me like I was nuts. And then I go, well, I mean, are we certain that we can agree on what the problem is? And lo and behold, there were some huge disagreements about what the problem was.
And some people were like, oh, the problem is that he's not trimming his trees. And some people were like, well, the lights on this building don't work. So all relevant to public safety. You know, so I was like, let's just all get on the same page about what the problem is, because I'm assuming the problem is that there's a lot of drug dealers. And some people don't think that's the problem. Some people think it's the homelessness that are here. So let's all agree on what the problem is.
One of the things that we could agree upon was nobody wants any drug dealing on the corner. It makes us feel unsafe, right? And then we needed to agree that to some degree, you know, having the entire streets lined with tents and sleepers contributed to some of the disorder that led to drug dealing. So we had to come up to some agreement about what's acceptable and what's not to us, right? And so once we were able to do that, we were able to design an intervention that was tailored just for that. And the police could work with them, right?
And what we agreed on was that we were going to encourage people not to lie on the sidewalk between 6 in the morning and 6 at night. We were going to encourage people not to use needles on our sidewalk, and that we were going to work to try to take ownership, to take back the block.
So that's when we decided we're going to wash down the street at 2:30. That way, whatever the problem is, it goes away for a while. Whether it's homelessness or, you know, drug dealing or whatever.
And so every day when a special bell from St. Boniface rings, Dina, Mike, Nancy, Kim, and their neighbors spring into action and stake their claim on the corner.
We're never late.
for the washdown.
Pine-Sol with just a touch of bleach. You don't want to use too much bleach because then it splashes on your clothes. Not good.
Every day we have bloody uncapped syringes in front of the union every morning, anywhere between 2 and 15. Almost every day we have human feces on the sidewalk and urine. So we do actually clean. But really it's to meet our neighbors who come out at the same time and get to know them, which has been really great for all of us, I think. And to show everyone, the people on the street, our neighbors, our members, all the dealers, that this is a cared for place, that this is an important place. It's not just some no man's land where anything goes. And so every day for 15 minutes, that's what we do.
Close this?
Yeah, please. Nice weather. Also, I think people who use the hose, it's very calming.
In addition to the daily washdown, the safety group also initiated a monthly event, Four Corner Friday.
Something happened around here.
What is
it? Ain't exactly clear. There's the Marriott.
All the different organizations, businesses, schools occupy the four corners of four intersections right here in the Tenderloin. And just do something fun. We do bubbles. We had popcorn, you know, pitch and toss games, go fish games. The last time we had a whole dance party going on mid-block on Leavenworth. So for an hour and a half, one Friday a month, there's just a lot of fun on the street that makes everybody who's around feel like they're part of a community.
It sends a very powerful message to the drug dealers. There's more of us than there are of you, right? And we're totally coordinated. I think from day to day it ebbs and flows, but I think that the trajectory is that it's getting safer in the neighborhood every day.
While violent crime remained steady last year, there was a drop in thefts within a block of the corner and an increase in drug arrests. And since the end of 2015, there has been a much larger police presence on Leavenworth. Kim feels safer too.
It's definitely safer. When we started, the blinds were down. We were hiding out in our offices. And we were afraid of everybody on the street. And then we got together and we organized. And so we don't feel alone and we don't feel powerless. And that's better than the alternative. I mean, we are making community.
And for now, the dealers are part of it.
We just had Four Corners Friday. We made a mess with the popcorn. And, you know, one of the mid-level dealers on the street wants to know if I've got a broom, if he can clean up the popcorn on the street. It's because we have a relationship and he knows I care about the place, and he's come to care a little bit about it too.
Next week, we'll meet a senior citizen who lives right around the corner in the first bite-sized sound portrait from the intersection.
I've lived in the city for over 40 years. I turned 65, and I'm getting by. That's about all I can say.
In the meantime, want to hear more? Head to theintersection.fm. While you're at it, subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you've already subscribed and you like what you've heard, please rate us on iTunes. It's crowded out there and it really helps new listeners find us. The Intersection is a production of KALW. Ben Trefney is the editor, with an assist from Ashley Ann Krigbaum. And it's engineered by Chris Hoff and me. Special thanks to Daryl Carr, Donnie Gewurzman, Lisa Morehouse, and Olivia Henry for your ears and wisdom. Projects like this don't just happen. This one was made possible with a grant from the San Francisco Arts Commission and from Cal Humanities, a nonprofit partner of the NEH. Until next week, I'm David Boyer, and this is The Intersection.